Welcome in to another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host Dylan Barnes. We're back. We're back in action. It's been a little bit since we've been live. We're just getting rolling here. It's been an inconsistent couple weeks in the scheduling world, but we're back and we're here to talk some White Sox baseball, some White Sox farm system, particularly. It's going to be, an interesting season. We've had our ups and downs already. This Cubs series was pretty brutal. That was a bit of a rude awakening in general. It was not fun to watch the White Sox get beat up on. But at the same time, like we know, this is going to be an up and down year. We're prepared for it. We're ready for it. So we're going to talk. We're going to talk some recent transactions today. We'll talk about a couple guys at the big league level, and then we'll really dive into some of the big time prospects at the minor leagues and just check in with where guys are at throughout their development in 2025. Dylan, how you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm good. That Cubs series took a lot out of me after, especially after the hot, I don't want to say hot streak, but the
it was a hot streak.
Period of good baseball that the White Sox were playing for about a week before that. But there were signs. Miguel Vargas looks like the best player on the planet right now. He just won Player of the Week. He was pretty much the only bright spot. Chase Meidroth had his first big league homer over the weekend. But outside of that, man, it was not fun to watch. It wasn't pretty. It looked like the White Sox never played in a stadium with wind before.
Yeah, it was ugly, for sure. It was ugly. But you got to remember, a lot of these guys have not. I mean, I think Wrigley has a particularly dangerous nature with the weather and the sun there. It's kind of notorious for that, especially with some earlier in the day games when it gets hot there, the wind, whatever. It's not fun. I'm not going to excuse the poor quality baseball, but at the same time, it is what it is. We're going to get a lot of that mediocre baseball this season. I'm ready for that. I was prepared for that. And there is still some positives. Definitely some rough times right now, but we're gonna talk about some guys that are doing really well, some guys are struggling a bit, but some ups and downs. We should start with Vargas, we might as well, because that's the positive note to start on. Miguel Vargas, Dylan, I think both of us were higher than the consensus on him this season. Yeah. I think we were hoping and giving him the time to show something, right? Like, this is not a guy, in my opinion, it's not the same category as a organizational development project Lenine Sosa, no offense to him, right? But like, that's a guy that came up in the Sox system. He was never a highly regarded prospect. It was more of like, oh, this guy's numbers are good, let's see what happens, right? Miguel Vargas was a top 50 prospect in baseball at one point, right? Like, this is a different category of player, and I know that's not, you still have to perform at the big league level and show that you can be a big league player, but you needed to be a little more patient than I think most Sox fans are willing to be with this guy. And I'm not saying he's a superstar, but he's figured some stuff out. There's been some swing adjustments and he looks like a real piece. His last seven games have been absurd. His last seven games hitting .400, but the last 15 games, even as a whole, .288, .356, .596. That's almost an over 900, 950 or so OPS in the last 15 games now for Vargas. The power lately has been great, but also just the approach, man. I mean, the last seven games, one strikeout. The last 15 games, only five strikeouts compared to five walks. That is a massive improvement overall from Miguel Vargas in just terms of the way his at-bats are going right now.
Exactly. And the numbers you just said, if you just look at the period of time when he's changed his stance, we've seen the broadcast talk a ton about it. Every time he comes up to the plate, it's always like, oh, yeah, brought his hands a little bit lower. Since changing his swing, he is batting .350, .418 on base with a .638 slugging, a .197 WRC plus, and walking more than he's striking out. That is a good baseball player.
That plays.
I know that it's not going to sustain at a 200 WRC plus for the entire rest of his career. But if he can even be a 130 WRC plus bat, that is a fantastic sign, especially in the White Sox development program with Ryan Fuller doing that sort of change in just a single off day. And we see these numbers. That is a fantastic sign, especially for guys like Colson, where went down and worked with Ryan Fuller and is starting to maybe be the hitter that we expected. I know it hasn't been great for him in the 1 week that he's been back, but Miguel Vargas looks like an entirely different player, and I'm not going to write off pretty much anybody if Ryan Fuller can do this in a couple days.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I think there are some signs of positive development within the organization. And that's right. Something that we haven't seen for a lot of the guys in the system, especially on the hitting side. Like, we've been waiting for a lot of positive steps forward. And this is an example of a guy who, is showing clear signs of growth and development with the organization, not just, oh, you brought him over and then he developed somewhere else and then he's playing well for the White Sox. Right. Like, exactly. No, they brought this guy over and he was really struggling when he first came over and is now showing signs a year later. With the organization in his second year now with the team, like it's better and it's nicer. It's better to see at least, a positive step of growth from him. Couple transactions here, some decent moves here in recent times. There's just a lot of swapping guys in and out that feels like, just kind of a shuffle of names. Just see what happens. Maybe somebody sticks. Vinny Capra comes over from the Brewers on waivers, traded for Miguel Castro. Jacob Amaya experience being over. I will take that. Happy with that one. That works for me. Yeah. Tyler Gilbert goes on the IL. Jared Schuster comes back. And then today, Austin Slater comes back off the IL. Brooks Baldwin goes down to Charlotte. Bummer to see with Brooks. But I get it. I think you got to give him some time to keep working through some things. Got to remember this is a guy. I think a lot of people are like, oh, Brooks is nothing, whatever. And like, you do got to remember this is a guy who sped run through the minor leagues last year and really didn't have that full long experience of growth because he was playing so well. And that's a great thing to be playing so well. But sometimes those types of players do need that reset in their first full season at the big league level where they need some more time in AAA to work through some things offensively and to figure some things out in general. I think Baldwin will be back later this season with the Sox. And I do think he can, at the very least, carve out a bench utility role. I still think that's what best suits him, and I still think he is capable of being that player for this team. It just is going to be a little bit of a minor league reset here.
Yeah, he was also playing a ton of outfield. Like, ever since Talkman and Slater and Benintendi went down, he didn't see a single inning of infield work because that's where they needed him. And, that is going to be the type of player that he is. But if you look at his minor league defense, like games played at each position, he only had like a handful in either corner of the outfield.
Right. And last year, especially 2 years ago, he played exactly. More than, last year, especially. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He was mainly shortstop, second baseman. And to me, that's where I think he is suited best because him at short and Chase Meidroth him at second, Chase Meidroth at short, it's a good defensive middle infield. I know that we all sort of assumed Meidroth would be a second baseman. Maybe he does end up being a second baseman as he slows down, but that's more than fine. If 5 years down the line, he gets pushed to second, third, whatever. But yeah, with Baldwin, I think that he wasn't great and he just is in a funk right now. And if he gets back to hitting, then, it could look a little bit different. And I think, especially after the trade deadline, when a lot of the vets have been shipped out, hopefully, I hope that we don't have another Nicky Lopez situation last year where they're performing so bad that nobody trades for him. Right. But I don't know. It could be better for Brooks. And then, Vinny Capra, I still don't even think he exists. I haven't seen him in the dugout, on the field. I think we just made him up. Like, I don't think he actually exists. And then Schuster is, he just is another bulk relief guy that we like kind of need right now. Cause especially with Martin Perez going down. Yeah. It sucks. And I hope that Gilbert can come back somewhat soon because he looked great in that opener role. I think he opened for Jonathan Cannon and Sean.
He's
Burke.
Done the job there. He's done the job there for sure.
Yeah. I enjoy him in an opener role.
Yeah, I can see Gilbert at least being a piece, and that's a guy you can flip for something at the deadline. It feels like very similar to some of the guys where you hope you get one flyer for him and you call it a day and he eats some innings and that's a good situation, right? So that would be nice to get him back and decently soon. But yeah, more roster moves coming though. Talkman's supposed to be back soon. Adrian Hauser, this is shout out to this guy, our guy in the chat. Adrian Hauser, this was James Fox actually reported this first. John Heyman likes to steal the thunder, Robert Murray as well. But this was James Fox first. He was on that before anybody else was. But Adrian Hauser comes over. Another guy is going to eat some innings. Fine. But Mike Talkman is coming back. And then you've got the situation with Corey Lee, which is going to be very fascinating to see. I think the consensus at this point is that Lee, upon being returned from his rehab, is just optioned to Charlotte and stays in Charlotte. You can't push Caro out. You have to give Caro these innings at this point. He's up. He hasn't been. He slowed down a little lately, but he still is very much showing – you know, the fact that he's a big leaguer. And then you've got Matt Theis, who's been actually one of the better players on this team so far.
Exactly.
So at some point, like, Corey Lee just doesn't really fit. And I think that you try to trade him or Theis, right? I think the ideal situation is you can get some value for Theis or Lee, because I do think they're both big league catchers. You know, sorry, getting a little jab at
Tate. I've made that meme the second the trade got announced. So I can say that it wasn't just because Brooks was playing bad. I'm still always going to be a Brooks Baldwin fan. So I still like Chase Minor. I still like Brooks Baldwin.
But yeah, I think that Lee is probably optioned, and then the White Sox try to find out a trade route, because again, with Teal on the way too, like, you're going to have to move one of Theis or Lee sooner than later, or you're just having them sit around in AAA. And Corey Lee will do a good job in Charlotte, but like, he's, I'm not a huge Corey Lee person. I don't think he's going to be better or more useful than Carroll or Teal at any point, but like, he's still a big league backup in my opinion. So like, there's got to be some teams out there. I think there are some teams out there for sure that would rather have Corey Lee as their second catcher than whoever they have right now as their second catcher.
Exactly.
I think there's a good amount of teams actually that would rather have Corey Lee as their backup compared to whoever they have now.
Exactly. And you know, if they try and carry three catchers on the roster, which would be kind of stupid in my opinion, you would have to send Tim Elko down, because then a catcher is going to be behind the plate. One of them is going to be DH, I assume. And then Tim Elko is in no man's land, unless they finally cut ties with Andrew Vaughn, but that won't happen. So I'm not even going to try and speak it like it's going to happen, because it won't.
Yeah, I mean, pardon me. I think it's possible at some point, but not yet. We've talked about that. Not yet, probably. So we'll see what happens with those guys. But you know, I think the roster crunch is going to get real, and I think we're going to start to see where the White Sox prioritize things. And I hope the priority is placed upon some of the young guys instead of a Joshua Palacios, instead of, you know, even as much as I like Matt Theis, like if Matt Theis has been good and he's been fun to watch, but like, if you can find a trade partner for Matt Theis, like, take the trade. Like, yes, exactly. He's been a decent veteran presence, and like, yes, he's a solid catcher to have on the roster, but like, if there's any value there on the market, like, make that move and let Caro and Teal be the priority moving forward, right?
And it doesn't need to be at the deadline too. Like, if they think Lee is ready to be up, if they think Lee is like a big league catcher, trade Matt Theis right now. Like, some teams are they want a catcher right now. Like, the San Diego Padres had Martin
Maldonado. Matt Theis would start for the Padres tomorrow.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, seriously. So
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Getting into the minors, though, getting off the White Sox. The White Sox are, you know, not great. They're not a great team. We know this. 14-33 at this point. It's not beautiful, but it could always be worse for sure. But, you know, heading down to Charlotte, where we've got, you know, a handful of people that are worth us talking about here. We talked about Corey Lee a little. Charlotte, for reference, is 22-23, a decent Triple A team, all things considered, considering how much the pitching has been a mess there, up and down. Guys, they haven't even had a consistent rotation there at all this season. It's been a little shifty, but you know, they're still winning some games here and there. 22-23 right now at this point. Charlotte, the one name we got to start with here is Colson, right? I mean, Colson comes back, so this is I've been a little checked out the past couple weeks in terms of, you know, what's going on there fully, but Colson Montgomery, you know, he goes to Arizona. He has a week at the complex. He works with Ryan Fuller. He plays in complex games there. He kind of does this whole reset. He comes back, and then he's, you know, 6 hits in 5 games since coming back to Charlotte this week against either Aquinette this week. He played in all but one game, I think. He had one day off. He plays in 65 games, 6 hits, 3 being doubles. 2 walks in those 5 games and 4 strikeouts in 5 games, which is not, you know, it's not like, oh, this is Colson, the top prospect Colson, but it's a heck of a lot better than the Colson we saw for the first month of the season in Charlotte. That's for sure. We've been having a lot of conversations among the Future Sox guys about it. And like, what does Colson look like? I know everybody's got their own varying opinions, but like, at the very least, he looks better. It's an adjusted swing. There was clearly some intentional adjustments made. And I think that for him, like, I want to keep seeing it. Like, let's just see the adjustments. Let's give it 2-3 weeks of adjustments and see what this new revamped version of Colson looks like. And then we can go from there. But at the very least, it's been better than it was earlier in the season.
Yeah. The big thing that stands out to me is that he's not whiffing as much. Like, he's able to foul off pitches and go deep into at bats. Like, he had a couple like 9, 10, 11 pitch at bats where he ended up working walks. And I could be wrong, but I believe of the 4 strikeouts that he had, 3 of them, it could be all 4 of them were looking. They weren't swinging or anything. So It's not awful. It's still not where it needs to be, obviously, but there's signs of improvement. And, you know, Colson Montgomery has a ton of power. I'm not worried about him not hitting homers because those are going to come with time. Right now, I'm just worried about him putting bat on ball consistently and taking good at-bats because those were things that he wasn't doing earlier on in the year. And it's early. It's only been a week of games, but it looks like there's some tangible change. And I'm all for it because if Colson Montgomery can turn it around and end up being the shortstop that we expected, he doesn't even need to live up to like the top 10 prospect hype. If he can just be a solid everyday shortstop, that's a win because for
that'll
how bad
be
he looked
for sure.
For how bad he looked last year and the early parts of this year, I'm fine with that. If he can get everyday reps at some point this year, that's a win.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that it's, you know, he's going to get to the bigs this year. I think the White Sox have been pretty clear and transparent that, like, he's going to get to Chicago this year at some point because it's time to see it sooner than later. But, like, let's be patient. Let's give him a few months to see, at least a month or two at the very least, to see what these adjustments do. Like, I don't want to see him before the deadline. I don't see a reason to see him before the deadline. I just don't think it's necessary. I want to see what it looks like. I want to see how he kind of continues to make these adjustments, have better at bats, be more patient, use the whole field. Ian Eskridge has been preaching this. We've been talking about this. Like, use the whole field to his advantage. This guy is – Colson is his best self, and he was his best self in 2023 when he was taking his pitches and using the entire field to his advantage. This is a guy who is strong enough and capable enough with his abilities to drive the ball all over the field. Like, you got to see that in practice, though. Like, I want to see him really get into that and really start to do that more now than ever, even, I think. Like, you got to use everything at your advantage to just continue to find ways to be a productive hitter at this level, at the AAA level, and then eventually the big league level. So I think, you know, Colson in general, like, he's going to get there. It's just going to take some time. And I think getting there, right, like, the definition of getting there is not the same as what it maybe once was. Like, we know that. Like, it's not – we're no longer looking at him in that same way because it's been a really rough year and a half. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be a big league player, like you just said. And that doesn't mean he can't not be a big league player. I think he absolutely can be. And I think we just got to watch this happen with some time.
Yeah, and he's still very young. He's only 23. Right. Like, there's still a lot of time for him to become a big league player. And, you know, if it doesn't happen until a couple years down the line where he's productive, then sure. But the fact that he's looking better than ever right now, or better than ever in AAA right now, is a good sign to see because he just looked completely lost earlier on in the year. And
for sure,
I think his K rate was at like 40%, something absurdly high like that, but to only have 4 strikeouts through his first week back is a great sign of improvement, even if, you know, it doesn't stick the entire way, but hopefully.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm with you. I think there's an expectation there for what he's going to be, and I think he might not be the expectation that was set upon 2 years ago.
Yeah,
but I do
be
think
Corey
he
Seager.
Can be. Yeah, it might not be Corey Seager. Very few players are going to be Corey Seager. I'm not sure if anybody knows that, but like that's not a common thing. That's pretty uncommon for somebody to be Corey Seager. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But generally speaking, I'm ready. I'm excited to see him back and looking more comfortable in his at-bats. And I do think that Colson can still be a big league piece for this team. Not a ton else in Charlotte, a bunch of veterans there. Andre Lapicius has been really good lately. Corey Yolks has been really good lately. A handful of those vet guys that are mashing in Charlotte, but I'm not putting too much interest there personally. Kyle Teal has been pretty solid of late, I think. He definitely has turned a corner from that early. You know, he had the first week of the season where he was mashing and then had a really rough, you know, couple few weeks for a while there. But he's been good in May and general. Past 15 days for him, the last 9 games he's played, 833 OPS, four walks, 7 strikeouts in that time, 3 extra base hits. You know, there's some good signs there from Teal, getting on base at just under 400% clip, or 400 clip. So, you know, pretty solid overall from Teal. Again, like, he is even more log jammed now with Corey Lee back and healthy, like we said. So I don't see him being up until either Lee or Theis, at least one of the two, is traded. But I think, you know, once one of those guys is gone, then you have a more clear path to Kyle Teal getting to the big leagues this season, right?
Yeah, I think that he's probably the second guy up of Lee and him, just because I don't think that Lee, I don't think that even if Lee stays down there, I think even if they trade Tice, they're going to want Lee up regardless, just to give some, just so you don't have two rookie catchers on the big league team at the same time. But that would be fun. But I think with Teal, he, after that like hot streak where he had like, was it like five home runs in the first like week, 2 weeks, I think he tried to, I think he tried to sell out too much for power. And then just started beating everything into the ground and getting off balance. But now he looks like a professional hitter now. He he looks like the Kyle Teal that we expected to see, because honestly, I wasn't expecting much pop from his bat. I thought he would be more of like a on-base doubles type of catcher. So the fact that he's even hitting homers is a good sign to see.
Yeah, for sure. A couple other brief things in AAA, then we can move on, because I do really want to talk about Birmingham.
Yeah.
Wilkelmin Gonzalez and Nick Nastrini, both out of the bullpen, have been pretty good, actually. I haven't gotten to watch a ton of their outings, but both these guys, you know, this past 2 weeks, right, Nastrini's last three appearances have been out of the bullpen. He's got, you know, two runs allowed across 5 2/3. The big thing for him there is strikeouts are up a little, walks are slightly down, they're still a little high. And then Gonzalez, his last four outings have been out of the bullpen since going to Charlotte. 6.6 2/3 innings, two runs allowed, six strikeouts in that span for Gonzalez, only three walks in that group for him. So both those guys, you know, we've talked so many times throughout the offseason, throughout this season, right? Like, there's going to be guys that have to transition into a reliever, whether it's because of roster crunch or, you know, ability. And unfortunately, this has been the latter there. Like, it hasn't been like, oh, we don't have enough starters because we have too many starters, because right now, actually, the White Sox could use some starters. So unfortunately, it hasn't been a transition due to need. It's been a transition due to struggles, right? Which is kind of, you don't want it to be a transition because of that, but that doesn't mean there can't be good that comes from that transition. I think that both Nick Nastrini and Wilkelmin Gonzalez could be very legit major league relievers. And I'm at some point, I don't mind seeing what that looks like right now, because they both do look really good. Or at least better, right? So I'm looking forward to seeing more from them. I got to tune into some games and watch both those guys in relief, because it's a different thing to see them in relief than it is to, you know, watch them in when they're struggling as starters to command.
Yeah, and especially with the struggles that the bullpen has had, that it's going to be in flux the entire year. And both of them are on the 40-man, correct? I know Nastrini is, I believe. So you don't even have to DFA anybody. It's just optional. Right. Like, there's a very clear path for them to pitch in the big league bullpens if the organization wanted them to. And honestly, man, like at the end of like the month, if some of these guys are still doing as poorly as they are, I'm all for it, because Brandon Isert, yeah, his underlying numbers are good, but I mean, it feels like every time he comes into the game, it just crumbles away. It could be a one run lead, and then you blink, and it's a.
I know you're not a big Brandon Isert guy, huh?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Not at all, in fact.
Which is fair. So that's the situation in Charlotte. You know, there's a lot of roster changes there. There's going to be roster changes there all year, and we'll continue to see what happens for the most part. But, you know, I'm fine seeing some of those guys transition into relief role and seeing where it takes them. Let's get down to Birmingham, because I know that's one thing we really wanted to focus on today. You want to start on the hitting side, or should we just dive straight into the pitching? What are you thinking?
I think the pitching is what people want to hear more, so we'll start with that.
Yeah, we got a few questions about this earlier for everybody that's interested in getting into this pitching side of things here. The Birmingham rotation, coming into this year, we were like, man, this is going to be awesome. We get to watch the three top pitching prospects. They're all going to shove. It's going to be great. And it hasn't been great. Let's be real. Like, I think that, you know, the first couple weeks of the season, I kept saying, let's give it time. These guys are settling in. And for all of April, I'm not putting any stock in struggles, right? Like, that's not how I'm going to operate. Where it gets frustrating and confusing to me, and where you really have to start to evaluate and look at this and say, what is the plan organizationally, and what is the result and plan? Where do those meet for these players, particularly the top three prospects, right? Okay, let me give you where I'm at with these three guys, and then we can go from there, and you can kind of bounce back and forth here with me.
Yeah.
Noah Schultz is not throwing strikes, which is really weird, because Noah Schultz is a guy who's always been a strike thrower, right? He is going to figure it out, I think. I'm confident in Noah Schultz's skills and ability. The velo was back up yesterday, which is good to see. After a little bit of a drop, he was back to that 95 consistently yesterday. it's been frustrating and it's been hard at times to see the velo or the command really just drift for a guy that's always throwing strikes consistently. But in my opinion, for Schultz, it's not a total loss of all the command. It's he's missing spots, but he's not wild. I think there's a difference there between just not throwing anything well and missing spots around the zone. For the most part with Schultz, to me, it seems like he's been around the zone and he's just not quite finding the spots he needs to find right now. So that is less concerning to me than a guy like Kagan Smith, who has been way lower in velocity. I was talking to someone who, you know, who works for in Pensacola when he was there a few weeks ago, and like he was sitting like 92. Like Kagan Smith should not be sitting 92. You know, this is a guy in college that was up in the upper 90s for a lot of college, right? Like he was pumping when he was at Arkansas, and like this is a guy that needs to be in the mid 90s at least for him to be effective, especially being a, you know, a primary two pitch pitcher who mixes in a third and a fourth. But like he's very fastball slider heavy, and the slider, the movement on it has not been where it had been. And he's skipping a start this past week. Like, I just don't think Hagan's been this healthy. And then Grant Taylor is the third guy who looks great throwing three inning starts. And then, oh, he's a reliever. We're going to make him Mason Miller. Like, we've talked about this, you know, off record and stuff a bunch. Like, I just don't get it. I really don't get it. I get preserving his arm, I get trying to be cautious with his arm. Grant Taylor is too good of a pitcher to bucket him as a reliever at this point in his career because of the risk of his arm and his health. Let him throw 2 to 3 innings. If you need to have him do a 2-inning start sometimes, sure, fine. He should be starting, man. I'm not – 1 inning out of the bullpen is just not going to work in my eyes. I don't get it. I think it's really short-sighted. And unless he's actively dealing with an arm, you know, unless he's actively trying to stay healthy slowly – just the guy is too good to be pocketed as a reliever in his first professional full season. I just don't see it.
Yeah. And like we were saying earlier, when a pitcher tells you that they are going to become a reliever, like you should not be telling a pitcher that they have to become a reliever. Let their on-field performance dictate, okay, I'm not going to work out as a starter. It's time for the shift to the bullpen. Grant Taylor had no signs of that. He was dominant as a starter. And sure, if they think he's a closer, fine. I know that he could be one of the better ones in Major League Baseball. But he's a starter right now, and he should be built up as a starter because he could be one of the best starters in Major League Baseball too. It just makes no sense that they're pushing him to a relief role this soon into his career, because what is he building up towards? What was the point of having him start? That's the key thing for me, is if you tell a guy, okay, yeah, you're going to be in the rotation and you're going to be built up as a starter. And then a month later, even after he dominates, you're like, oh no, never mind. You're a relief guy now. It makes no sense. And if they want to get him to the big leagues quicker, that's even dumber in my opinion, because this season we're not going to be good. We would be.
What are you bringing him up for? Like, what is exactly you're stabilizing the bullpen of a 50-win team? Like,
yeah,
who cares?
It makes no sense. Like, it makes absolutely no sense.
What's interesting is there's so much of this push right now where I think a lot of people are like, oh my God, why did the team not invest in a bullpen? And like, I get you want to learn how to win games. Like, I understand. But at the end of the day, a major league bullpen is the least investable category of a team and the category that is the least priority. Like what the disconnect for me though is like, don't make Grant Taylor a reliever that's fast tracked. You've got Peyton Paulette and Addison Coffey and guys like that are doing their thing and shoving as relievers that are already a reliever. Like, bring those guys up and give, if you want some young high level talent in the bullpen, Peyton Paulette's last 4 games, Dylan, he's thrown 5 innings with 1 hit, 0 runs and 8 strikeouts. I don't care. Skip Charlotte, bring Peyton Paulette up and make him your back end guy immediately. Go ahead.
Exactly.
Like, that's fine. Don't do that to Grant Taylor.
Both of those guys were starters and they didn't have it out of the rotation, and they got moved to the bullpen and now they're dominating. Thank you. Rick Hahn
spent, what did that do last time when the White Sox spent money on the bullpen? I don't know.
$70 million on a bullpen.
And how did that work out for the White Sox, right? They won one playoff game in that entire time, and now here we are with a totally different core and a totally different rebuild, right? Like, you don't spend big on the bullpen, and you don't turn your high-level pitching prospects into relievers before you have to, right? It's a different situation with Nick Nastrini, who I really wanted Nick Nastrini to stick as a starter. He's a great dude. He has very good stuff. It's been 2.5 years of trying to see Nick Nastrini as a starter, and it hasn't worked. The command hasn't gotten there to this point. I'm not saying it can't ever get there. I think he could get there. That is when it's okay to transition a guy into a relief role. When he's at AAA, he's gone through the progression as a starter. He's built up as a starter. He got big league appearances as a starter, but it hadn't quite come together. Then you say, okay, let's see this guy and let's maximize his stuff in a relief role. Grant Taylor has pitched like 10 minor league games, dude. What are we doing here? It blows my mind. And this is the most, expressive I'm going to get in this situation, at least for now. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. I want to hear some level of explanation behind it from somebody, right? Like, I'm curious. I'm going to have to try to get on an interview or something and politely figure out a situation to talk about this with someone, because I don't see it right now. I really don't see it. And I'm just curious what the idea is there. Hagen Smith, like, it's a different story. Shut him down, please. Just give him a few weeks off. Like, put him on the IL, honestly. Like, I don't want to see Hagen Smith pitch until he is fully healthy and the velo looks back up and he looks like himself. Like, I want Hagen Smith to pitch. Don't get me wrong. I want to see Hagen Smith pitch. But, like, he just doesn't look like himself more compared to these other two, right? Like, I just want him to be healthy. With Grant Taylor, like, I don't get it. So we'll see, man. We'll see what happens. But, like, and, like, shout out to, like, Jake Polish. Like, shout out to Jake Polish. Yeah. Like, he's shoving. He's been starting the past 2 weeks, filling out and Riley Gowans. Yeah, I mean, these guys have been pitching really well. I'm happy for them. Like, that's not a bad thing. It's great to see some guys step up and pitch well, in these situations. But Grant Taylor needs to be one of those guys in the rotation. Yeah. So that's where I'm at with the Birmingham. I think we're both on the same page there. Shout out to Jake Polish. Riley Gowans had a great start this week. Shane Murphy has been awesome. He's been kind of mixing between a piggyback and a starter. And he started one game this week. He relieved one game. His last two outings, he's thrown 10 and a third, one earned run, 12 strikeouts. Great stuff. Polish has been awesome. 10 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 11 Ks. So some really solid performances there in Birmingham from the pitching staff. Unfortunately, not, some of the top guys. Noah Schultz, I think he's going to figure it out. I think you make some adjustments, you work through some things. I do think he's going to figure some things out. Maybe he takes a start or two off. That might be good just to reset his arm a little bit. He was ramping up earlier than he ever has, right? Like, he threw in major league beginning, spring training games, right? Like, that was different for Noah and a different experience for him. So maybe he needs a little bit of a reset there. I don't know. Whatever form it needs to come for him, I think he'll get there. Hagen Smith, give him the time off he needs. Grant Taylor, get him back in the rotation, please.
The thing with Hagen is I was very concerned about his health pre-draft. If you followed me in the pre-draft cycle leading up to the draft last year, I was very anti-Hagen Smith solely because I don't think he's going to stay healthy. He had Tommy John at 16 years old, and he's on this is now year 6 of his second UCL. I'm very scared to invest a top 5 pick on a guy who, if he blows out, I'm not sure that he ever regains that form. And yes, I know Tommy Johns are more common, and basically you are going to need one if you pitch in the big leagues. But 2 before you turn 25 is very, very rough, and he might be fine, he might not be, but there's just no data there for me to say, okay, yeah, like 2 Tommy Johns is fine. And right now he doesn't look healthy, the velo's down. In spring training, he didn't have the best command, so I don't know. I'm very, very, very scared with that, because if he ends up going down with another Tommy John, then I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna be at, because you could have had JJ Weatherholt was my guy. I'm glad that we got Braden Montgomery. Yeah, I'm glad that we got Braden Montgomery. Like I said, if you followed me in the draft cycle, you know how much I love Braden Montgomery, and he's doing great. I'm so glad that he's in the organization now.
For sure.
But it shouldn't have had to come to this. I'm just very worried.
Yeah. We will see where that goes. Honestly, we'll definitely see what happens. Yeah, Cags is another one worth mentioning there, who's destroying AA right now. But we'll move from there. I'm a little worried too, but I'm going to give it some time. We'll see what happens. We'll talk a couple hitters, two hitters to talk about here. I think that's just about it in Birmingham, and then we'll move down to Winston, and we'll get through a few more things before we get rolling here today. I want to make sure we get some questions. If anybody has any, to fire some questions away, we'll circle back to some of those. Yep. The last 2 weeks, Dylan, Ryan Delaney, his last 10 games in the past two series, 10 games, he is slashing 417, 436, 750. That is a 1186 OPS, seven extra base hits in those 10 games, two walks, only six strikeouts in 10 games, which for his style of hitter is very good to see.
Yeah.
Ryan Delaney's having himself a Tim Elko type of season right now, in the minor leagues at least. And this might be upsetting to some Sox fans. I think Ryan Delaney's a little bit more complete of a hitter than Tim Elko.
That's what I was just going to say.
I think he's a little bit better of a hitter than Tim Elko in a lot of different ways. He's a different hitter. He doesn't have quite the raw power Tim Elko has.
Right.
I think Ryan Delaney is fully capable of becoming a clear top 30 prospect right now. I mean, I think that at some point, like, you have to take the draft stock and, you know, just numbers and production become important at some point, right? Like, exactly. You have to value that when you get to double A, especially, right? Like, double A is that kind of cliff where, like, you got to value production. And Ryan Delaney has just absolutely transitioned seamlessly to the double A level since mashing in high A to start the year.
Yeah. And the big thing with Tim Elko, even like all throughout the levels of minor league baseball, his issue was striking out. He was striking out at above 25%. Right.
Ryan Delaney, all of the minor leagues. Yeah.
Ryan Delaney's strikeout rate this year is 15. That's a number that, like, is good for, like, any hitter that it,
even and that if, will go up, right, at the higher levels, right? But, like, Ryan Delaney's style of hitting at 20% could easily survive as a 20% strikeout guy, right? Like, that's completely doable. So I think it's very encouraging. I mean, this is also, right, the Southern League. Like, we've talked about this. This is a league where it's very hard to hit. So, you know, Delaney had a 153 WRC plus in high A, and it's in double A now is a 182. A 182 mark. The walk rate is up. The strikeout rate is down since reaching double A. Delaney looks all the part of a quick riser in the system. And, you know, I'm not buying into, I'm not saying he's a top end prospect or anything, but, like, he deserves a shot in Charlotte, I think, later this season. And frankly, maybe Chicago. He's 25 years old.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a similar Tim Elko type run from Ryan Delaney, where just mashes his way up and then the organization keeps him down for another year because Andrew Vaughn exists. And
yeah, maybe that could be the case. Other guy to mention briefly, Jacob Gonzalez. I will let you take the floor on this one. Gonzalez, Ian pointed this out to us the other day. Torpedo bat. Gonzalez had a brutal week 2 weeks ago. And it looks like very recently started using a torpedo bat for whatever that, you know, I am not really buying into, like, fixing hitters. Like, I don't think it's as drastic as some people might think it is.
No.
But six games this week, seven hits, you know, three extra base hits, two walks, two strikeouts, 915 OPS this past week.
Yeah, with Gonzalez, I think the big thing that I was noticing is that he was just hitting everything on the ground, and he wasn't catching enough barrel to be, like, a hard ground ball through fielders. And with the torpedo bat, that's kind of what it's, like, designed to do. You're catching more of the baseball on the actual bat. And, you know, it looked like he started to figure something out. So if he ends up being a guy, then sure. Yeah. And yes, we do draft him.
I would love to be proven wrong. Yes, he was drafted over Arjun Namala. He was also drafted over Aiden Miller. There was plenty of players that I... Cole Emerson, geez, that's another good one. Yeah, a lot of players that I would have drafted at that spot. But Gonzalez looks to be, you know, had a really good week. Generally this season, you know, there's some positive, like, the walk rate's up from last year, which is good to see. Right. Like, he's walking over 10% of the time. He's getting on base at a pretty decent clip. Like, there's some solid takeaways there, and especially the past week, he has looked good. Shall we head down to Winston-Salem?
I'm good.
Sounds like a plan. Down to Winston. You got to start with Brandon Montgomery. You know, he slowed down relatively to the Brandon Montgomery track, right? Like, I think he slowed down compared to the absurd numbers he was putting up before this past week. But, like, it's still been pretty good. Like, even this past week, like, it was a poor week for him, and he still got on base at a 308 clip. Like, in general, like, he's still just been great. It, you know, comes down to earth a little this week, but the week before he was insane and had four homers or whatever. So, like, in the past 2 weeks, he has a 1074 OPS, even coming off a week where he struggled. Exactly. You know,
right? Yeah, he had a 672 OPS this week and still got on base every game. Like, I think
he still led the team to an OPS this week. It was a rough week for Winston, for sure.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, they got swept by a very good Brooklyn Cyclones team. If you haven't looked at that roster, that's a nutty roster that they have. Yeah.
And then I noticed, I don't know if you saw what it was, but I think part of the Cyclones, they went crazy, but you know, there was somebody missing from that Winston lineup that's a pretty important piece. Mr. Sam Antonacci, I think, is dealing with a little bit of an injury, unfortunately. I don't have confirmation on exactly what he's doing with, but Sam Antonacci didn't play at all this past week, I don't think. So he hasn't played since, he's been out since May 11th. So he hasn't played since last week against Bowling Green. Right. So he missed this entire week against the Cyclones. So obviously a big piece from the lineup. But in general, the Cyclones just dominated Winston-Salem this whole week. Six-game sweep. So not a ton to talk about. What else on that roster is worth touching on quickly?
Not much. From the past week, it was not great. I can pull up pitching numbers. Hold on. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, not much. I'm pulling up the thing. Lucas Gordon continues to just do his job.
That was the one.
That guy, I know we talked about him briefly, but like, he just keeps just consistently putting up a good start. Like, it's pretty impressive, actually. And I think this is a guy who, you know, has always been more floor over ceiling coming out of the draft, and his pedigree being an SEC guy, right? Like, he was kind of always in my eyes like, oh, he's got a pretty good floor to be an organizational depth arm. But like, now it's getting to the point where, like, I think he's going to make my top 30 in the back end. I think he has to, right? I think he's, you know, when you turn in a one-run start pretty much every time you take them out, and like, you got to start getting a little bit more credibility in terms of prospect pedigree, right? Like, he just keeps doing it. Like, you know, last start was a one-run, five-inning outing. The start before that was a two-run, five-inning outing with five strikeouts. This time it was six strikeouts. Like, he's a really steady 5 to 6 innings of two-run ball with a handful of strikeouts and pretty good command. And, like, those are guys you need in the organization. Those are guys that can become a Mason Adams, right? Like, I'm not saying he's going to be, but, like, those are players that can continue to develop in the right direction, like a Mason Adams type of player, where I think Lucas Gordon could be kind of that train of player that continues to just have a quality start at every level.
Exactly. One other player, Christian Opper, makes his Winston-Salem debut. It wasn't great. 3 2/3, 4 hits, four earned.
It actually, four to walks, his credit, this is one of the only games I watched this past week and watched fully. He actually had really good stuff through three innings and then had a rough fourth inning. So, like, all things considered, Opper throwing his first three innings of high A ball being very solid, and then him struggling his last inning was like, that's going to happen. I'm not too worried about that. Like, it was really a pretty solid start, given that it was his first start at the level, and given that, you know, it was really just the last inning of work where he started to get hit around a little bit, he didn't really get beat up that badly, and the numbers are, you know, a little, he lost the command a little in the fourth inning. It happens, like, no big deal, but good to see him at that level, and pretty cool that you got a 20-year-old pitching prospect who just breezed through Kannapolis like that after struggling in Arizona last year in the complex. Like, to see him make those adjustments, you know, definitely I encourage people to check out the interview I did with him a week or two ago. You know, he's developed in a very, very nice way the past year.
Yeah, the fact that he's even in high right now is a great sign, because I remember checking in on some of his stats in Arizona last year, and I was like, oh man, I was pretty high on you. But now he looks like he's like a slam dunk top 20, maybe even top 15 guy in the system.
Yeah, he's flying up the top 30, that's for sure. And it's good to see him make that debut at that level. Anybody else in Winston? I think we're pretty good at that level. It was a rough week there. It'll be more fun to talk about there at other points. In Kannapolis, what was going on in Kannapolis? We can start on the pitching side if you want.
Sure. Let me pull it up. It wasn't like a great week for a lot of the starters. The starters had didn't have the best week. Seth Keener makes his low A, I guess, re-debut. He got sent back down for Christian Opper, went 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, five strikeouts. So it's a step in the right direction. It wasn't pretty in Winston-Salem for Keener. And if he just needs to spend some time in Kannapolis to right the ship, then sure. But I think that Keener is way too good of a pitcher to be as bad as he was in Winston-Salem. So I'm all for him just getting right in Kannapolis, and obviously King George is in fact back.
Yeah, I was going to say Keener is, I think, going to reset there. I think he'll get to Winston again later this season. Justin Sinibaldi had a pretty nice start. He's been pretty impressive to me, actually. Sinibaldi's a guy who I didn't have a ton of expectation for, knowledge of, honestly, coming into his draft year last year. And then, you know, comes into the organization last year. He only pitched a couple starts last year at the end of the year. But he's had a few really good starts this year. He's shown some stuff, I think. I think he's shown enough where I hope that he will be back. I think he could get to Winston in late in the season, but heading on the offensive side, yeah. George looks good. George looks like he's finding his footing a little, which is great to see. A couple home runs this past week. In general, this last series, right, for George, six games, slashed .304, .346, .826, obviously inflated by three home runs, but an 1172 OPS, five extra base hits in six games, six RBIs. The strikeouts are still high for sure. I do think that will come down, but like, there's this, like, with George, the thing that I see with him is like, there's these little bursts of positivity in different areas that aren't all meshing, but if they all come together at the same time, you're looking at an awesome player. So it's it's still a little while away for sure, but you can see the blueprint in spurts, right? Like, you can see him getting on base more often here and there. He has a couple games where he's walking more consistently. He has a couple games where he's mashing home runs more consistently. Now this week, right, he really started to see the power tick up a little. He knows what he needs to do, and I think he's taking the development seriously. And you heard Jeff Cohen. I encourage people, make sure you're checking out at AAA Jeff, our other co-host of this show, who had a great interview with George last week, kind of just checking in with where he's at, where his mentality's at, all those things, right? He knows what he needs to be as a hitter, and he's finding it slowly. He's not there yet. But you see a week or two where he's walking more. You see a week or two where he's having long at bats and working counts a little more. This past week, you see the week where he really starts to tap into that power. You see a few massive home runs from George. It's a big if, and there's still a chance it never comes together. Like, I will be honest with people who like have this expectation. I love George, personally, player, all of the above. Great dude, great player. There's a ton to dream on. There's a chance it doesn't come together. But if those little facets that he's showing blend at the same time and come together as a player, the upside is as high as we've been saying it is. Like, it's a big if, but that big if could be an elite hitter. And that's where you get excited when you watch him play. And it's understandable to get excited because there is the possibility that he can kind of blend all those little aspects he shows into an elite player.
Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with everything I was going to say. Like, there's weeks where he's... No, go ahead. It was weeks where, he's striking out less and he's putting the ball in play a lot more, but is just getting unlucky in terms of BABIP. And, you know, hitters are robbing him of a double in the gap because he laid out and made a great play. And there are weeks like this week where he hits a homer in three straight games. Like, there's going to be ups and downs with George's game. And I think even if he gets to the big leagues, there are going to still be weeks where, he is striking out a bunch. But if everything comes together, like you were saying, I don't think we've seen a White Sox prospect with as high of a ceiling as he would have.
Yeah, it's hard everything, to find him, for sure.
If everything blends together, man, he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, even the 90th percentile outcome for George is a very good player, but like the 100th percentile outcome is like a superstar, right? And that's what's fun to dream on for him. And there's a lot of things that can happen between then and now. But this was a week where it's like, okay, the power has come in. He's finding that groove. Let's see the approach then blend with the power as it starts to keep going throughout the season. Like, I want one of those weeks from him where he like walks five times and hits four bombs. Like, that's when I'm going to look at George and I'm going to be like, okay, this is what we can dream on, right? So we'll see what happens there. And then the other guy, right, that's funny to talk about, and Caleb Bonnemer, they're obviously, George and Bonnemer kind of are going to be compared together and in tandem in their development, right? Both being top-end high school draft picks, right? Very different players, of course, but this was a funny week for Bonnemer where he has a homer and a triple, right? So he shows that upside. He doesn't hit as much, only four hits in five games, but then he walked eight times and just took every bat he could and was patient and calm and did his thing. Gets on base at a 522 clip this week. Caleb Bonnemer is just a very complete player. And I do think that there's a ton to like there. Hopefully going to have an interview with Bonnemer here coming up soon, which will be exciting to get to really just pick his brain a little bit about what he's doing. But I do think Bonnemer is flashing signs of a very complete player.
Yeah, I think that Bonnemer is like we are going to see him on top 100 lists in the very near future because he is just absolutely tearing up low A, and the things that he's doing in his game, the walking, the being patient at the plate, the not striking out a bunch, the putting the ball in play a ton. That is what scouts were worried about. And the fact that he's able to make consistent contact and not have extended spells of whiffing and striking out, that is a great sign because the power is always going to be there for Bonnemer. Like, the power was never a question. The hit tool was always a thing. We're like, oh, you know, if it develops, it could be good. But, you know, there's some growth to be had there. We're seeing that growth, and now he looks like a real blue chip guy in the system.
Yep, 100%. He looks like a high-end prospect for a reason. Another hitter to mention this week who – is this another torpedo guy? I believe, actually, it might be. Ryan Burrows looks like he turned a little bit of a corner this week, which is good to see. I think this is a guy who, you know, we've always liked him, right? We've always liked some of the upside he possesses. But at the plate in general, like, it hasn't really come together yet over the past two seasons at least. And then this past week – 5 hits, including 2 home runs, 4 walks, really 3 stolen bases. Just a really solid week all around for Burrows, aside from a little bit of a base running lapse at one point that I know has become a little bit reoccurrent with him. But, you know, some solid output for him earlier on. So I do think Burrows looked, you know, it's good to see him have a little bit of step forward in his development.
Yeah, you know, 2 homers, I think, is that might be like his most homers in a week in his professional career, at least in low A. But, you know, if Burrows can turn a corner and be yet another middle infielder in the sort of in the depth that the White Sox have built up, there's a lot to like in his game.
Yeah, I think it's another fun piece to keep an eye on. A young guy who does have a lot of athleticism, has some really good defensive plays in the middle infield, right? So another guy who just is a depth piece at this point, right? But I would love to see, I would love to see him keep taking up in this direction. It's nice to see him have a big week for sure. A couple other guys I'm excited to keep seeing some development, right? Like Miguel Santos is a fun one in Kannapolis. Mm-hmm. Really random, you know, he's 24 years old and he was a full, you know, five-year college guy, I think, who the White Sox picked up last year. But I would love to see him in Winston. I don't really think he needs to be in Kannapolis anymore. I think at his age and having shown pretty well here in a couple weeks in Canny, I would like to see him get to Winston at some point soon. A bunch of other new faces in Kannapolis that I'm going to have to dive into and we'll like to get a gauge on here moving forward. But generally still a pretty fun team to watch, even without Braden Montgomery there. It still is a pretty fun squad there in Kannapolis. So looking forward to seeing where things trend there. That's just about all I've got, Dylan. Anything else you got on the mind here?
I think that's just about it for me too.
If anybody has any other questions, throw them in here while we have a few more minutes here. But, you know, I'm excited to get back into things. It's been a little bit of a hectic time for both of us for sure. But I'm ready to, you know, have some more time in the future here to dive back into some minor league stuff and to get after it a little more. And we'll keep it rolling, man. I'm excited to see where things happen. And hopefully having a Bonnemer interview here soon. Make sure everybody you're following at Future Sox for all that stuff. Oh, this is an interesting one. Why isn't Braden playing the field? This is a good question. I actually don't have an answer to this one from our guy Baseball Toss. I don't know why, but Braden has been DHing a lot. I think that it's probably somewhat just load management coming off of an injury last year and having, you know, wanting to really let him develop with the bat. I think at the end of the day, Braden Montgomery is a good outfielder, but like the bat is the priority there with him. So I think in his first full season, you know, coming off of a long layoff, I think it's probably just some layer of load management. But I do wonder why he hasn't played the field as much because it has been a decent amount of DHing for him recently from what I've seen.
Yeah, and especially coming off of like his Kannapolis tenure where he was playing center field almost every day.
Yeah, because there was nobody else playing center there for the most part. So
exactly. So yeah, it is something to keep an eye on, but I think for the most part, as long as he's on the field, he's going to be fine. And, you know, Sammy Zavala is, Zavala is a great defensive center fielder. And as long as he's in center field, he's definitely better than Braden Montgomery. As good as Braden Montgomery is on defense, Zavala is able to just track down everything. But
I still think, like I said, I think Braden will get times. I think he'll get more outings in the right too. I think it's just a little bit.
Exactly.
It still is just getting him eased into that level, getting him settled and keeping his body fresh as much as possible. I think it's probably, I don't think there's much more to it than that.
Yeah, there's going to be some mixing and matching. I'm sure there are going to be days where Zavala DHs and Braden plays center. So it's in flux.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, man. Well, that's all I've got. I think we're good for this episode of the Roundup. Appreciate everybody who tuned in, hopped in the chat, talked to us a little. Like I said, we'll have some good interviews coming up. We'll have some more content rolling here. Before you know it, we're going to be, you know, getting to that time in the year where we hopefully are going to see even more promotions. You know, when the White Sox slowly but surely bring more young guys up. Hopefully, Addison Coffee get to Chicago. Let's book a flight. And we will check in with you all next time. Appreciate you doing the time today, Dill. And we'll talk soon, man.
Of course. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Yeah, thanks.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Spidey Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save big.